Part of the Boundless Audio Podcast Network.
I just want to kick this off by saying, fuck, I love y'all. I ain't got to justify a motherfucking thing. Every time one of y'all is out there doing the damn thing, my heart starts palpitating. I'm fine to get this shit off my chest and say, you're the best. Let's go. Welcome to Whining About Herstory, the women's history podcast where two besties with breasties whine about women from history that you probably haven't heard of, but definitely should have. I'm Emily.
I'm Kelly.
And I just started listening to Megan Thee Stallion. Can you tell?
Nice.
I'm so far behind. Like, I've heard some of her songs. I was like in a mood where I was like, I just need something to like, let's get it. Let's go. And so, yeah. Yeah, no, I'm loving it.
I love you. I love this journey for you.
I love this journey for me too. Oh my God. How are you doing today, Kelly?
Sorry. The dogs are in here because my husband's gone and I'm... Zana is a chaos gremlin and I'm trying to figure out what she's eating.
It's funny because
I'm doing fine, Emily.
I don't know if it's more chaotic to have them... in here or not.
Here.
Like, it really depends. They'll settle down though. Right now they're just kind of toddling around the room, sniffing things, getting into things, snorting. So if you hear snorting, it's
Emily.
It's the pugs. No, it's not me. It's not this time. Sometimes when I have a stuffy nose, I snort, but it's not me this time.
Okay, fine.
All right. Well, I am very, very, very happy to announce... we have another wine sponsor.
Yeah.
Actually, this is a repeat offender. Our favorite Canadian, Chelsea.
Yeah, Chelsea.
Dr. Chelsea, because she's a goddamn doctor. She's a doctor and she listens to this. One out of one Canadian doctors recommend whining about herstory.
One out of one.
And buying us wine. So actually... I got to see Chelsea in person recently.
So did I. I got to meet Chelsea.
Kelly got to meet Chelsea excited. For the first time. And it was so funny because Chelsea knows Kelly from listening to the podcast. And Kelly was like, I'm so nervous about meeting her. And I'm like, she knows you. She loves you. And Kelly's like, she only knows the podcast me. And I'm like, which is quite an authentic version of you.
Like, very intense version of
like,
me.
But very authentic. I'm like, if she loves podcast you... she loves you. It's like when I first started doing the Hinge thing, at first I was like, I'm not telling anyone about the podcast, but I'm like, if they can't handle podcast me,
they can't
handle any version of me. So she recently took a trip to Germany because she's doing the damn thing.
Hell,
that's
yeah.
Got my heart palpitating. And she brought us back a bottle of wine. It is called Don Gelder Trocken. Im Barrique gerieft Deutscher Qualitätswein.
That was beautiful German.
It was so beautiful. Krankenwagen.
Krankenwagen.
Schmetterling. Yeah, no. The two things I know how to say in German are arguably the best things to know how to say in German.
Anti-baby pillen. That's how you say birth control.
Anti-baby pillin?
Legit.
Are you fucking serious?
Yes.
Germany. Mis amigos de Alemán. Is this the truth? De verdad?
Yes, it is.
Oh my God, anti-baby pillin. That's going to be the name of my sophomore album. Anti-baby pillin. All right, so this is all in German. So Chelsea got this from a very fancy wine store called a German Aldi. And the back of the bottle says Dornfelder Falls 2021. Im kleinen Eichenfass Barrique gerieft sich sieht dirs elegant. Oh, Elegante. It looks like it's elegante. That's not how it's pronounced. Rotwein fin Frühstück. Ooh, Frühstück. That's something about fruit. Because Früchte is like a fruit. Mit einer Angham gut ein Burden Holznot. anti-baby pillin. Do not drink while pregnant. It's from Falls, Deutschland. And it has like a little bit on the map. So you know how Germany kind of has like that little tail feather at the bottom of it? Yeah. It's like just up from the tail feather to the west. Case Rind Lamm. It has a picture of a tray. So I wonder if it's saying what you're supposed to eat with it, which might include lamb. I don't know. It's 12% ABV.
Hey,
that part I can read. Huzzah. Actually, it says 12.0% vol. They don't use.
No, I mean, that's, I think, what some wine bottles in America say too.
No,
depending on where they're from.
No, it's just that Germany doesn't use decimal points. They always want to leave it open to interpretation. It's like, is it 12 or is it 120, but like a non-committal 120.
Non-committal 120. Yeah, where
did you ever have an English teacher that told you you put commas wherever you would naturally take a pause? That's what that is, where it's like 120. Well, hold on. I have to look something up.
Of course you do. Kidding.
I want to look up how to say cheers in German.
Oh, geez.
And it is... Ooh, gobabble.com. Oh, it's Prost. That's easy.
Prost.
Okay, well, Prost to Chelsea, Prost to this wine that we literally cannot pronounce any bit of, and Prost to good health.
Prost.
Strovia. It was the saddest little funk. We're drinking out of our plastic fucking patriarchy wine glasses, and it's, they're not clinkers. That's not their job. They're subtle. They're like, oh, we're wine glasses, but we're not like loud about it. We don't have to advertise it. Ooh.
Yeah, it's good.
It is really refreshing. That's not something I usually say about a red. You know,
not usually.
They're usually like full bodied and they've got some spice to them. But this is like, I could drink this on a hot day and feel refreshed. And that's a beautiful feeling. To the Schmetterlings, may they prosper.
Schmetterling is butterfly.
I know.
I am telling our listeners. I was literally about to say, for anyone out there who doesn't know.
I forgot when I said Schmetterling, I did not explain what it was.
Krankenwagen is ambulance.
Yeah, and then Krankenhaus is hospital.
Mm-hmm. Jeremy, I love you.
Or what I call my house. Emily's Krankenhaus. Willkommen to Emily's Krankenhaus. Please observe the Schmetterlings.
You have butterflies?
Hopefully. I mean, we need them. I want butterflies. I'm actually I'm making plans for some landscaping in my backyard, and I want to do like all natural, like Minnesota native plants, and like make it all like
for the bees and the butterflies?
For the pollinators. Go pollinators. They shouldn't take anti-baby pill in Willkommen. What is it?
Anti-baby pill in. That's it.
That's it.
That is the entirety.
I say it and then I'm like, that can't be right. That can't be right. Emily, you're making this up. Yeah, no, the pollinator should not be taking anti-baby pill in. They need to reproduce and they need to get their jazz on with some flowers. But yeah, I want to like have a natural pollinator friendly backyard.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's maybe cool. I don't have to mow as much or you like barely ever less.
Like if you have grass, you're going to have to.
I know, but I want less grass and more wild native Minnesota plants. I want the chihuahuas to get lost in the jungle that is my backyard.
Nice.
They do get lost in the ferns. I have a fuck ton of ferns in my backyard because those things, ferns. They're like the syphilis of the plant world. They spread everywhere. Or maybe it's like the chlamydia.
I mean,
spreads more easily? Are they the crabs of the plant world?
If you think about
the genital lice of the plant world.
Any of the undergrowth style plants.
Yeah. So my backyard is full of fucking ferns, like in this one part of the landscaping. And it's so funny because when the chihuahuas go in there, you can't see them. You just see the ferns
like
shake.
Wrestling.
Well, it's like...
it's like their own mini Jurassic Park.
It really is. And then they come out. It's like, don't go in the long grass. The raptors. Yeah, no, it's fine. So, Kelly, I understand you have a say their name for us.
I have an update on the pugs. They have all flopped.
Okay.
And they have
thank
rested.
Thank God.
That's why I brought a bed in here. Yeah. Like, they will chill.
That's a giant bed, too. Like,
well, all of the, I think, except for a very limited number of our beds, all of our dog beds fit about two of our dogs, depending on how they lay.
Which is funny because this one, I think, can only comfortably fit two of your dogs. It can technically fit all three.
If they all laid like Navi is laying, like long ways, they could all fit.
I'm saying they could all fit, but they won't because they need space.
Yeah, especially Dory.
That's why I need a king bed, because I'm like, well, I need my space. The dogs need their space. Arthur needs his space, even though his space is directly on top of me. And then I need to like stretch
you need
out.
The rest of
this I need to be able to stretch out and not touch another living thing around me.
Nice.
All right. Was your say their name?
So my say their name was sent to me by my lovely sister-in-law, Caitlin, who has caught up on the podcast now. She wanted me to let everyone know.
Yeah!
She's like, I listened and I'm caught up now, just so you know. And I was
oh
like,
my God.
I'm sorry.
Now she can vicariously know what my life is and then ask me very specific questions on things that she shouldn't otherwise know about.
Right. And then you're like, oh yeah, you listen to the podcast.
I'm like, oh yeah, this is basically my public diary.
But yeah, she sent me to say their name. Or a recommendation to look at Jasmine Paris. And this woman is very much still alive and very amazing. So I was like, I'm going to do it as a say their name instead of a full story. Because I don't like covering people that are still alive. It makes me anxious.
Kelly killed one person and she will never get over it because I won't let her.
Anyways, the reason I am bringing up Jasmine Paris is that she was recently the first woman ever to complete the Barkley Marathon in Frozen Head State Park, Tennessee. So this is an absolutely insane race. People have 60 hours to finish it. It's a 100-mile course, which includes about 16,500 meters of elevation, which is the equivalent of climbing Mount Everest twice.
Ew.
20 people have finished it total, and she's the first woman, and that was this year. Like, this was like a month ago.
Oh my God, was this, I saw all those pictures of her like collapsed
at the finish line.
Oh my God, yes, I heard about this.
Yeah, and she talks about it, and she's like, I was hallucinating, like, so all this stuff. She's hallucinating. She finished 99 seconds inside of the cutoff time.
Oh,
my
God.
She finished at 59 hours, 58 minutes, and 21 seconds.
What the fuck?
Yeah. And there's actually several really good articles that, like, are interviews with her, and she just really talks about, like, you know, like, I wasn't sure I was going to make it, and, like, all this different stuff, but she also, like, really focuses on, like, not just her achievements, but it's like she said, basically, like, just get out and do things you love. Like, because she is a full-time mom, she's married, she has a job, and all of this stuff and shit. So, like, when people were like, oh, like, when people brought up, like, her being, like, superwoman and being super impressive, she doesn't really like that. And she said, quote, I hope maybe it encourages people to have hobbies of their own when kids, work, and life get in the way, because it has certainly been really good for my mental health.
I love that message, because when someone becomes a mother, the whole perception of their self-identity and everyone else's perception of their identity shifts in a really big way. And it can be really, there's a lot of pressure both on your, you know, put on yourself and from others. There's a lot of emphasis on sacrifice, especially self-sacrifice. It's not about like, well, we're sacrificing as a family to have this child. It's no, your job as the mother is to go without.
Yeah.
Is to suffer for the betterment of your child. But that doesn't make a happy, healthy child. Mm. Obviously, sacrifice and going without is part of being a parent. Like, it just is. But that doesn't mean you don't get to be a person outside of being a mother. It's just another part of who you are, and all of those things can coexist. All of those things can even contradict each other.
Yeah.
Like, they can all exist inside you at the same time.
And this isn't the first time that Jasmine has done something like this. So she is, I don't remember if I said, she's British. She's from Britain. And she is a national fell running champion over there. So fell running is like hill running. It's generally running like in the countryside, over hills, off road.
Kind of like more extreme cross country.
Like we have some of it here, but not nearly as much. And she set records for two different fell running challenges. Races, both of which have been beaten, but she did set records, and she was also the first woman, or we already talked about the Barkley Marathon, but she was also the first woman to complete, gosh, where is it? I just lost it. Hold on. There it is. She was the first woman to, the way they worded it was like, gosh, like I wrote this down and now I lost it.
Sorry, I'm reading a little
bit. Outright win the race, which I don't know what that means. So, okay, so she, in 2019, she competed in what's known as like the spine race.
Mm.
Yep. I'm assuming it's like a mountain spine. You know, that's a thing. Yeah, it's along a national trail in England with a small section in Scotland. It's very, very, very tough. It's 268 miles. And she's the first woman to win the event overall. I don't know what that means. Oh, overall, meaning she beat out male and female competitors.
Oh,
that's right.
Oh, okay. I was like,
I got very confused because I thought they were talking about her timing. And I'm like, what do you mean overall? Did someone like stop and like restart? My brain just wasn't functioning.
So I looked up the Barkley Marathon and it actually has an interesting bit of history that I think you would find and our listeners would find interesting.
We're talking about a different race now, Emily.
No. I know. But the Barkley Marathon that she ran.
She completed.
So the Barkley course, this is straight from Wiki. The Barkley course was the brainchild of Gary Lazarus Lake Cantrell and Carl Raw Dog Hen. God damn it. The idea of the race was inspired upon hearing about the 1977 escape of James Earl Ray, the assassin of Martin Luther King Jr. from nearby Brushy Mountain State Penitentiary.
Yep.
Ray covered only about 12 miles after running 54 and a half hours in the woods, hiding from air searches during the day. Cantrell said to himself, I could do at least 100 miles, mocking Ray's low mileage. Thus, the marathon was born. I love the idea that a couple of guys were sitting around and they're like, wow,
I could run so much further in 60 hours
than this fucking murderer
who is like also probably hiding along the way,
but
still.
Also like they took something very different from James Earl Ray going on the run. The man who murdered, assassinated Martin Luther King Jr. They're like, well, I could have done a better job than that son of a bitch.
Yeah.
Like, I could have ran more. It's such a dude thing.
The one thing to point out is this isn't just like 100 miles straight. It is five laps of 20 miles each or five loops. And you get to, I think you can like eat. I assume you eat between, but I think it's like you're still on the clock because she talked about like eating pastas and bananas and like all of this stuff. But yeah, like she had previously done it, I think, twice before, maybe only once before. And previously she had made it to the third loop. One other woman had made it to the fourth loop, and she's the only woman to have completed all five loops and done it within the time limit. So, yeah, it's insane. Like, there's only 40 runners that run at a time, and it's been going since 1980?
I was going to say, at least the late 70s.
1986. And only 20 people have finished total, and there's 40 runners a year.
I wonder how they choose the runners, like if you have to buy a ticket.
I think it's just they open registration. Yeah, it says requirements and times to submit an entry application are closely guarded secret with no details advertised to the public. So you have to like know, and you have to complete an essay on why I should be allowed to run in the Barkley.
Oh my God.
And then there's obviously like other things as well. And apparently mm-hmm. if you get accepted, you receive a letter of condolence.
Oh my God.
Which is great.
Where it's like, it's our deepest sympathy that you now have to fucking do this, you idiot.
The first race started in 1986, but the first person didn't finish it until 1995.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Was I watching it with you or someone else? There is this, I think it's like 24 or 48 hour race. It's somewhere in Scandahoovia.
Yeah, where they like where run downhill. Underground.
No, oh, no, yeah, it's, me then. It's in an indoor track, mm-hmm. and the track itself is not very big, but you just go around over and over for 48 hours. And the goal, like whoever wins, runs the most laps.
Yeah.
In that time. So you can stop and take breaks and people might, you know, take a nap or that kind of thing. But it's so mentally taxing because it's so boring. There's nothing to look at. You're just going in the same circle over and over again. And they were interviewing a bunch of people who were doing this race and people were saying like, I only want to do it once to say I had done it. And this is my sixth time participating. Like it's almost addictive in a way. And I'm like, people's lust for self-punishment and like that physical and mental challenge is so fascinating.
Yep.
I do not have it.
Yeah.
My emotional wellness cannot handle it.
Yeah. So back to Jasmine. So in 2019, like I said, she competed in the spine race, and I think she competed in the winter one because there used to just be one race, but now there's like a summer one, a winter one, and an Arctic one, and I don't know what the differences are.
Because winter and Arctic?
Yeah, which I don't know if that's in a different look. I did not look into it, but
that's awful.
Not only did she win overall, meaning she beat out every other contestant, male and female, but she did it while setting a record and while stopping to breastfeed at checkpoints along the way. Or not breastfeed, but pump along the way.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Shut the actual fuck up. I love it. I love it. I love it.
Yep. So her record was 83 hours, 12 minutes, and 23 seconds, with the previous female record being 109 hours and 54 minutes, and the previous record overall being 95 hours and 17 minutes. So she crushed it by 12 hours. And she was breastfeeding while she was doing it. Or not breastfeeding, but pumping while she was doing it.
The idea of getting through a 40-hour work week is already sometimes too much for me.
Yeah.
Well, actually, my work week's a little more than 40 hours, but still. Running or in the Arctic for 80 hours while
it's not in the Arctic, it's in Britain.
I don't care. Whatever, doing anything, any remotely physical for 80 hours and that being a record time, horrifying. And then she's pumping in between.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. This is the most insane shit. I love it.
Yeah. I know. It's pretty cool. But, yeah, so this Berkeley Marathon, like while she is the first person to finish it, this isn't the first time that she's done something like this and just absolutely fucking crushed it. Like she does fell running and stuff all the time. She's competed in a lot of other things and won other like awards, mm-hmm. but yeah, the spine race and then the Berkeley Marathons are kind of like the two crowning achievements. And then, like I said, she's also married with children, and she is a PhD from Edinburgh on, she works as like a veterinary lecturer and a vet. So,
oh my God, I love her.
So like all of this that she's doing is like, it is a hobby. And so, yeah, I wanted, when Caitlin sent it to me, while I was like, I'm not going to cover her as a full story, I wanted to do a Say Their Name, and it ended up being a much longer Say Their Name than I originally intended, but
well,
there we go.
There's so much to talk about. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Like, okay, I guess she doesn't like the comparison to Wonder Woman, but she is.
She's still super impressive.
She's a superhuman. Like, all of the things that she is doing and accomplishing in all of her identities coexisting is just so incredible to me.
Yeah, same.
But yeah, I remember seeing those pictures. I was like, ooh, the Berkeley Marathon, what the fuck is this? And I like didn't want to read about it because I'm like, I feel like it's going to make me tired. Like, do you ever read about someone's experience and you're like physically trained?
That's funny.
No,
it is. Okay. No. Yeah.
And I'm like, please tell me I'm not alone.
I read a bunch of articles about her because it's absolutely insane. And yeah, the fact that she is just kind of like, I'm a regular person who just likes to do this in their free time, like, is so amazing to me.
Good God.
So yeah, that's Jasmine. Way to go, Jasmine. Keep
Jasmine
being amazing.
Paris. Also, her name is incredible.
Right?
Like, it sounds like a comic book hero. Jasmine Paris was an ordinary girl until a rogue tree bit her and she became the Berkeley bitch. I don't know. The bad bitch of Berkeley. Burr, 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 burr,
burr, burr, and the spine.
Burr, 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 burr. Yeah, she can whip her spine out of her body and use it like a whip.
No.
And she shoots.
Because she would just like crumble to the ground.
No. Because she's held up by her superiority. She's like, I can do anything.
Burr, burr, it's burr. Too much, Emily. It's too much.
Someone write this comic, please.
No, please don't. That would be disturbing. Like, I'm just thinking about like the gore of ripping
the
your own spine out.
The Bill Dam of Berkeley. Da, 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 da. And in every fight scene, she's also breastfeeding a kid. And no one mentions it.
Yeah, just no. Or like the one person like, that does. Just
she like burps in the middle of a fight scene. Oh, and then there's a horse.
I think at this point her kids are toddlers because between the spine and this year, I think like she talked about, I think her kids, being like toddlers now.
But then she goes and saves like horses in distress.
Just in the middle of the race.
Yeah.
As she's crossing the finish line, she's not riding a horse. They're just running behind her.
They're cheering her on. They're holding signs.
No, they're just running behind her. She's like part of, she's the leader of the herd.
Leader of the pack.
I don't think horse groups are called packs.
What are they called?
Herds.
Are they herds? I thought they were gallops.
Look at that
gallop of horses. Sauntering
yeah, a
by.
A group of horses is called a herd.
I like gallop better. Like,
what? Gallop is like a term for one of their styles of movement.
I know, but I like that better. Look at that majestic gallop of horses moving across the plains.
Nope. Emily said too much wine. I'm done.
This German wine doesn't
fuck
around.
We haven't even gotten through, like, we've just barely, it's been a half an hour. We've just gotten through to say their name. I'm done.
I'm so tired, and this wine is not fucking around. What is 12,0 in German? Because it's not 12.0 ABV. I refuse to believe it.
I mean, it should be 12% volume, which should mean alcohol by volume.
Do you think it was, they left, do you think the two zeros on the percentage sign are actually, it's like 12,000? You're just writing it fancy.
No, I think it's the fact that you like chugged your glass of wine.
It's so refreshing. I'm so tired. I even ate before I came over. Like I ate real food.
You ready to actually start?
Is it my first?
No,
Do I go first? Oh, thank you, Jesus. Gracias.
But I was like, we're like a half an hour in and we haven't even actually started.
Well, that's
the
because Jasmine Paris was so incredible.
Yeah, she was.
We had to talk about all of her things.
I know. Especially like I did cover her, but she wasn't actually the woman I'm covering.
She's a running, marathoning
she's
horse.
Fell running
horse doctor breast. Pumping badass.
I like that you just threw horses in there because I'm pretty sure she's actually a small animal vet, which
did
would
it
not
say that.
Yes.
Okay, because I'm imagining the mom from Rick and Morty
now. No.
Where she's just like elbow deep in a horse's chest, being like, I'm not gonna let you die on me.
No. Okay. She's a small animal vet.
Well, then she's working on ponies. I'm not going to let you die
or,
on
you know,
me, pony.
Cats, generally.
I would love for her to treat Arthur. She wouldn't let him die.
All right.
All right.
I am covering Alice Millier. Millier.
It's say Millier.
French.
Millier. Millier. It's actually Millier. It's
M-I-L-L-I-A-T.
Million.
Sure. Whatever. Alice.
I love her.
She was born Alice Josephine Marie Million. So Millette is her married name. And Million is her birth name. So they're different.
It's because in French, everything is...
Yeah. Well, it's
like you can't tell anything.
I would pronounce this if I knew she wasn't French, which I know she's French. I would pronounce it Million.
Million.
But it's French.
Million dollar baby.
Million, because it's French.
Million dollar baby.
Right. Also, sorry, side note, because I was still on Jasmine's Wikipedia page. She apparently took a 12-month sabbatical in Minnesota. Don't know why.
Because she wanted to tackle the hardest terrain, which was Minnesota in winter. Unfortunately, probably she not. Came in the winter of 2023.
No, she did like right after she graduated, like before she did all of this stuff.
Oh my God. That's what inspired her. She's like, if I can handle this fucking place, I can handle anything.
Sure.
Yes.
I mean, our winters, I think, are similar to British winters.
No,
so.
They're worse. They're worse. Our winters in Minnesota are significantly worse.
I mean, but she like also hangs out in like Sweden and stuff, which their winters are comparable to ours because we're on the same.
Yeah, but
line.
She's not living in it. She's wintering in
she's
Sweden.
Running in it.
She's wintering in Sweden, whatever that might look to her.
Anyways,
but Minnesota is different.
So Alice was born on May 5th, 1884 in Nantes. Which is a city.
Nantucket of France.
Nantucket of France. It's the third highest ranking city in France. After Paris and Lyon.
In what?
Lyon.
In what ranking? Like population? Quality of life?
I literally don't know. That's just what Wikipedia said.
Okay.
It's like the sixth largest, but yeah, I think like per capita, like the money it makes. I think it's just, anyways, she was the eldest of five children. Her parents were grocers, and later when things were difficult, her mom would end up working as a seamstress and her father would just be like an office worker. She grew up in like a relatively standard
working
1880s.
Class family.
Yeah, working class family. There's not a lot known about her childhood, which is pretty standard for women of that time. In 1904, a 20-year-old Alice would travel to England.
Ooh.
There she would meet and marry a man named Joseph Millier. Whatever. Joseph. She would marry a man named Joseph.
Now she's a Millier dollar baby.
Who was also from Nantes. So, like,
she met a man from Nantucket.
I couldn't find, because I tried so hard to figure out, like, if they knew each other beforehand and she, like, followed him, or if, like, if it was one of those, like, oh, we know this person that also moved there, go meet up with, you know, like, if they knew each other prior to both moving to this other location, or if it just happened to be they met each other and that's what they had in common. Could not find anything.
I do actually love the idea that they grew up in the same
city.
The same city. In my head, it's a small town.
It's not.
Because it's the 1800s. And they just never ran into each other. And then they met later on. They're like, oh my God, I'm also from Nantucket. And it's like, oh my God, no fucking way. What school did
it's
you go to?
Not Nantucket.
Well, that's like Tierney and her boyfriend. He also grew up in Rochester and like went to high school here. And he's around our age. But he went to a different high school. So he might as well have lived on a different continent. Hmm. Two schools, both alike in dignity in our fair Nantucket.
Still not Nantucket.
I don't remember how you say it. And I don't think we even...
Nantes?
In our fair Nantes.
Thank you. Sadly, like, one, I couldn't find a lot about this marriage. And two, it was a fairly short marriage. It was 3 to 4 years long. He would die in 1908.
Aww.
Literally, like, all I could find about this marriage is his name, that they got married some point after she moved to England, and then he died in 1908, and they had no children. That's all I could find.
You know, normally that's how much we know about the wife of a guy.
Exactly.
Flipping the script.
So yeah, they had no children, and she would never remarry. So that's kind of where we're at. So whilst in England and dating and married to Joseph prior to his death, Alice would take up rowing, which is a very popular thing in England, apparently. But it was kind of uncommon for that time, but Joseph didn't care. And then after Joseph passed, she would travel and really develop her language skills, which would enable her to become a translator. When following the outbreak of the First World War, she would return to France. And while I couldn't find a lot about her actual, like, job, it sounds like that's kind of what she did both during the war and after, is that, like, her main job was a translator.
That's
not
so
what
cool.
She's known for.
See, that's so cool because, like, I've been trying to learn Spanish for 2 years and mi español es muy malo. Like, and she's like, oh, I'm a grown-ass adult, and in a few years, like, I'm working as a translator from English, or from French to English and vice versa. Like, that is
well,
so cool.
Well, and she traveled all over, so, like, I couldn't even find, like, what languages she was translating necessarily. Like I said,
oh,
like, it was very, like, sparse
information. I guess I just assumed it would be French and English, but you're
right. I mean, yeah, but it might be other languages as well. So prior to returning to France, as she was traveling, she would also start participating and take up swimming and field hockey as well.
I love that.
So just a brief, like, background. I've been trying to add a little bit more background when just to set the stage.
Ooh, I love stage setting.
So it is generally accepted that women's interest in sports and athletics in the early 1900s and the subsequent organization of sports clubs for women came about as a result of the radical changes regarding their status and role in society. There's no, like, official date where people are like, that is exactly when women decided they wanted to play sports. Because, of course, like, there were always people that wanted to.
Because women have always been involved in sport.
Exactly, like, in some way. But, like, this was the time of a lot more awakening, where you saw a lot more women being like, hey, we want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to tell because this was a time when, the women that had opportunities, the ones that were educated and, you know, things like that, when there started to be like that new woman who was
yes.
viewed as the intellectual equal to men, that's what the new woman was. A lot of them still chose to stay out of sports because they're like, okay, like we're making headway in the intellectual space. I'm not going to dip my toe into something else. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So it was mainly the working class women who dared to kind of step out and into the world of sports in a way that was very public. They would participate in activities such as bicycling and foot racing, wrestling, boxing, and all sorts of what would be considered outrageous behaviors that shocked the sensibilities of the traditionalists of that time.
And their uteruses were falling out left and right.
Right. And some people even say, like, that perhaps, you know, it's like the feminist movement had begun about a half a century before the early 1900s. And so, like, that could have been part of it. But also, like, World War I really planted a lot of seeds for that women can do stuff and mm-hmm. that they can't, like, when the men are gone, they can take care of themselves and it's okay.
And they can fill roles that were otherwise reserved for men who had to go to the front lines.
Right. So many, many women were willing to face public disapproval and even ridicule and even in order to assert themselves in the sports arena. And Alice was one of these women.
The other thing I think that's interesting, like you mentioned that it was working class women who were predominantly getting into the field of sports.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of that, so there were a lot of health myths around,
oh God, yeah.
around athletics and, you know, all the bad things that could happen to a woman if she was too active. But think of working women. They're already active
yeah,
as
they don't care.
Fuck. They know their body is not going to fall apart from a little running or bicycling or whatever, you know? And while their reputation and the way they look to others is still very important and very controlled, it doesn't have the same weight, I feel like, as society women.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there are different expectations, so they kind of had a little more freedom to, which is interesting because usually we see these
aristocratic ladies.
The aristocrat ladies. And they have more freedom because they have the money and the independence. But in this case,
a lot of it very much was like, we're already kind of butting heads with men in the intellect arena. Let's not like push it further.
That's so interesting.
It is.
I never thought of that.
Yeah,
that's super cool.
I didn't either. And then like I read it and I was like, that makes so much sense.
It totally does. But yeah, again, working class women are afraid of their uteruses falling out. No. They're like, oh shit, if it hasn't fallen out now, that thing's not coming out.
Okay, so we briefly have to talk about a man before we get back to talking about Alice. So there was a man during this time named Pierre de Coubertin. Mm. Who was a well-educated, well-informed man, and he was very aware of the feminist movement and goals. He, however, chose to remain very close-minded and fiercely opposed to women's participation in sports for as long as he lived. You may be asking yourself, Kelly, why the fuck are we even talking about Pierre? Why does he matter? Well, this man... This hemorrhoid has been credited with reviving the Olympic Games and founding the International Olympic Committee in 1894, which obviously, if this is a man very opposed to feminist views and women in sports, the fact that he is reviving or founding the Olympic Committee is bad news.
Oh, fuck.
Yeah. He was once quoted as saying... He was also French, if you couldn't tell by the name Pierre. But he was quoted as saying, quote, "The French, by heredity, by disposition, and by taste, were opposed to the apparent equality of the two sexes. The French would not accept equality," he said, "as long as it was not openly... The French would accept equality as long as it is not openly displayed and did not change deep-rooted traditions." So basically he's like, we can be equal, we just won't talk about it, and you can't appear equal, which means you're not equal.
You know, we have a friend named Alump de Gouge, who I think has some words for our friend Pierre.
So this hemorrhoid would take every opportunity he could to criticize and ridicule women's open expression or display of equality through sports. In 1908, he basically thoroughly embarrassed and offended, or he was thoroughly embarrassed and offended by the so-called indecency of the English women who were sledding. They were coming down hills on sleds in ungraceful positions. And he was very like loudly, like he would tell anyone that would listen how indecent this was and that the sight was painfully ugly to him. He also had a major problem with women engaging in strenuous exercise and sweating. He was fine with women's exercises for reasons of health and in private surroundings.
Sex.
But if not, if they sweat. Sadly, this hemorrhoid's attitude would not change over the years, and even sadder still, this actually didn't differ too much from a lot of the general public's opinion at the time.
See, that's why I was like, why do general we care about him?
General public's opinion would change, but his would not. And because he's the head of the Olympic Committee, that's why we care about him.
Well, because my when you were describing him, I'm like, and like he's one of
that's why I put the
so
why.
Many other unremarkable assholes who are like disgusted by a woman who is not directly serving them.
Yep. And the only reason I mention him directly is because he directly affects Alice.
Okay.
And yeah, like, unfortunately, his disapproval and the disapproving attitude of men in sporting establishments tended to turn into hostility toward even the potential of women joining sports.
Because hating women always leads to violence.
Yeah.
So, you can't just, like, casually be like, I don't care for women. No, if you hate women, it leads to violence.
Yeah. So women in France in particular were refused entry into or support by the male federations of sports, such as in track and field, swimming, basketball, soccer, cycling, blah, 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 blah. And the direct result of men refusing to let women into their establishments led to the women creating their own sports clubs.
And then the men were like, that's exclusionary. Yeah. How dare you? You say you're inclusive, but you don't let men in your girls' sports club.
Right. So a little bit more background. So for those who don't know about like the Olympics in general, the 1900 Olympics were the first Olympics to allow women athletes, but only in golf and tennis.
The aristocratic sports.
Yep. Eventually, the Olympics would integrate women's swimming and other events into the game. However, track and field in particular remained absent for women in the Olympics at this time.
You can't have women learn how to run away faster from you.
Right. So here's the interesting thing about women's sports clubs, at least in France. The first one and the first few, actually, were established by men. Not shocking, because it's still like a very much a control thing. Mm-hmm. So this, the one that Alice would join was established by a man also named Pierre, but this was Pierre Passé. And he would create a club known as the Femina Sport, which is actually still in existence today.
Really?
Yep. So this was a combination of like teaching women dance and then various sports, generally like track and field sports. And they actually they were required to take courses given by the disciples of Isadora Duncan, who's a very, very famous American dancer.
Yes. Oh my God. She's on my list.
Yeah. So
she's on my list. She was recommended.
She's incredible. Like, yeah. I didn't look into her a lot, but I like was like, who is Isadora Duncan? But she's a dancer. So yeah, it was a lot of classes on like grace and dance, but it was very contemporary dance. This isn't like old school Victorian style dance. This is much more contemporary.
Yeah.
So Femina Sport began to sponsor matches in soccer and rugby. Although at this point, rugby was called Barrette in France.
Barrette!
Which I love. And bicycling. God. So like, even though this was run by a guy, he's still like, yes, let's get women into other sports. In 1917, it organized the first French national championship in track and field. Women performing in a stadium? Scandalous.
Okay, I have a headcanon that both Pierres are the same guy, but it's a Jekyll and Hyde version. Yeah, exactly. We're like,
women are great. Women are horrible. Women are great.
His Hyde version's a fucking misogynist, but his Dr. Jekyll version is actually like a deep-seated feminist.
Women.
He's like, wait, you look kind of familiar. What's your name? Pierre. That seems kind of passé. It's a totally different last name. It's
passé, exactly. No.
Two Pierres, yeah, exactly. Not alike in dignity in our fair Verona.
So, yeah, these women that performed in this first French national championship in track and field were incredibly brave, because these mm-hmm. were people that had to face public opinion that brought shame to their friends, to their families. They were viewed as wild, emotionally disturbed, fanatic, basically all this stuff. And they were like, the only reason these women want to do this is because they want to fight, because they're not mentally well.
Shame on you. Shame on your cow.
There was other like weird controversy surrounding this, but I don't want to get into it because it's about one specific woman. And I was like, I'm not going down that rabbit hole. So if you want to look into it, look at like Femina Sport 1917. Yeah, it's wild, but it has nothing to do with Alice. So during this time, Alice was part of Femina Sport. She participated in a lot of this stuff. And she also, in her free time, organized a successful women's association football tournament. Although I'm pretty sure anytime I say football in this article, it's probably soccer to our American listeners.
Football?
Football. So in December of 1917, the leaders of the women's sports clubs of France, who were all men, created the first national women's sports federation and called it the Fédération des Sociétés Féminines Sportives de France. Or, you know, the Women's Society of Sports in France, I think is what it was.
Good for them.
And Alice, like I said, was elected treasurer. So even though this was formed by men, they still elected Alice as treasurer. And she was well on her way to becoming a highly controversial and dominant figure in international sports for women. And she continued to do so. She wasn't like a strong militant type. Like you saw some of the feminists, particularly in America, that were very like, because, you know, when the votes for women came up in America, they kind of split into two camps. It was like, we need to be loud. We need to be aggressive. We need to be, like in people's faces feminists. And then you had the people that were like, no, like we can do this by just kind of like convincing people to take our sides quietly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there was kind of the more aggressive approach versus the more passive approach. There was the approach that prioritized bringing men in versus we're going to do this for ourselves because men have done nothing but oppress us. Both views. Totally valid. They're both true.
Alice was more on the like, let's show them what we can do.
Yeah.
And bring them to our cause side than like, let's be aggressive. Let's like overthrow everything. But she was still very like dominant in a great way. And she would quickly climb through the ranks of this women's sports federation, even though it was run by men, to go from treasurer to president in less than 2 years.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Like, she just, like, quietly was like, I'm going to move to this position and this position and this position. Oh, look, I'm president. Oh, look, I can do whatever I want.
Oh, my God. How'd that happen? Oh,
you know, yeah, exactly.
Everyone suck my clit.
So in 1919, once she was elected president of the federation, Alice asked the International Association of Athletics Federation, or the IAAF, who is the international governing body of the sport of athletics, which is track and field, cross country running, road running, race walking, mountain running, and ultra run. Basically, the IAAF is track and field running, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Apparently, that is what defines athletics.
Well, to be fair, track and field involves a lot of different sports. But I feel like we're more popular at that time.
I would consider athletics to include like football and soccer. But no, like apparently athletics, at least at this time, just meant the track and field and running and stuff.
Well, because soccer and football just involve track and field stuff in a team setting.
Yeah, but apparently they're not governed by that body. Anyways, but so she petitioned this IAAF to include women's track and field in the 1924 Olympic Games. So even though there's this, like, the committee for the Olympic Games, the IAAF, because they're in charge of, like, track and field events, they kind of dictate which track and field events are played in the Olympics.
Okay.
And so she's like, hey, what do you think about letting the women play track and field? Like, you're letting them play golf and tennis. What do you think? And they were basically like, no.
Let's not pretend we did. Exactly. Which my parents fucking hated.
So she basically became involved in organizing what would become known as the 1921 Women's Olympiad, which was held in Monte Carlo. Which was an event widely regarded as a response to the refusal to not include track and field in the Olympics, basically. It's said that Alice didn't actually attend the event, but it went pretty well. Like, it was basically just a women's track and field event.
To be fair, we have all organized an event that we then failed to be able to go to.
Yeah.
I organized a big beach day one summer for like me and all my high school friends. And this was like after a bunch of us had graduated and I was a live-in nanny in another town.
Oh, no.
I was so tired the day of the beach gathering that literally like I was getting a ride back into Rochester. We drove past the beach and I'm like, just fucking keep going. I'm taking a nap. They built a little race car out of sand. And I'm like, what the fuck? Why is this like one thing I missed? I know. You know, it's one of those things where, like, if I was there, I probably wouldn't like feel like I missed out on a lot. But because I did miss out, like what I've concocted in my head
is amazing.
Yeah. Like they basically went on a whole like Alice through the rabbit hole adventure without me. And I missed out because I was taking a nap because I was exhausted after looking after five fucking kids.
Yeah. So still in 1919. So even though she organized the 1921 Women's Olympiad, this is still in 1919. She and the Federation organized championships in field hockey, association football, basketball, and swimming.
Yes.
So specifically like to the French sports. By 1920, the leadership of the organization, again, which was originally established by men, and Alice was only the treasurer, was exclusively female. So like the entirety of like the pyramid of like CEO and everything, all women by 1920, which is fantastic. And actually Alice organized the first international match of soccer or football, in which French women played against England in four different soccer matches. So that was like one of the, like, at least for France, one of the first like international women's soccer games, which is kind of cool.
I love that. And of those four matches, 1.5 goals were scored.
I don't know. I did not look.
You can watch so much soccer and nothing fucking happens. Like, actually, you can watch a lot of football and nothing happens.
Don't watch soccer,
at least stuff is happening. It's just like no one makes a goal because they're both so good. Like, both teams are really good at what they're doing.
So even though she was the president of the one federation, she would actually go on to create her own federation. And she shortened the name because it was, she no longer wanted it to be just about France. So she made the Fédération Sportive Féminine Internationale, or the International Women's Sports Federation, which again, is still around today.
Love it.
So that's the FSFI.
FIFSI.
Right.
FIFSI. Oh my God, it's a great cat name.
But they decided to make the Women's World Game in opposition to what was known as the Women's Olympiad. Because the Women's Olympiad was created by the French Athletics Federation, or the FAA, which was an all-men organization, and basically this was like the FFA's way to control women's sports. And even though it was called the Women's Olympiad, it took place on a pigeon shooting field instead of an actual like running track. Because again, this was a track and field event. So
it was like hurdles, but with dead pigeons everywhere.
So that was like what Alice was going against. Basically, she created the Women's World Games in response to this Women's Olympiad.
Okay.
So, immediately when she created FIFSI, it was very active, like from the get-go. It was very active. At its first meeting, it already began making rules and regulations for international sports competitions.
Good God.
It immediately drew up a constitution and set about making plans for those Women's Olympic Games I mentioned. These games were supposed to be held every 4 years beginning in 1922. So during this whole time that Alice is creating this federation, the FIFSI, in her free time, even though, like, I think her main job was actually as a translator, but I didn't find a lot about that.
I keep forgetting that she works a full-time job while doing that's so Jasmine Paris, though.
Right.
She's all of these things all at once.
And there's one more. So in the background, during her whatever free time she had, Alice assembled and managed a women's football team in Paris that toured the United Kingdom and represented France, and actually would go on to play against Dick Kerr's Lady in the first European International Women's Football Tournament in 1920.
I'm sorry, did you say Dicker's Ladies?
Dick Kerr.
It's a person's name. That can't be right.
Why?
Dicker? His name's Dicker?
Dick Kerr.
What the fuck?
It's a dude.
That is the best fucking name I have ever heard. Dick Kerr.
Dick Kerr Ladies FC is one of the earliest known. It's what English football teams are called.
England doesn't know how to name shit.
But it's one of the earliest known women's association football teams in England.
Oh my fucking God. Okay. I love this so
apparently
much.
There is a company that's Dick, Kerr and Company.
Dicker Company. Oh my God. Can we get merch? Can we buy their shirts?
I don't think they're still around.
I want a little jacket that says Dicker's Ladies.
They went defunct in 1919.
No! I think Dicker's Ladies.
I don't know about the Football Federation might still be around.
No, but I need Dicker's Ladies merch.
Well, yeah, Dicker Ladies was the Football Federation.
Right, but you said they
Dick
went defunct.
Dick Kerr and Company
oh.
went defined.
No, I just want something that says Dickers Ladies.
That did dissolve in 1965.
No! Along with my dreams.
They still have a website.
Oh my God. Okay. I'm going to their shop right
now.
You
I don't
keep
know
talking.
If they have a shop. I don't think
I
they have a shop.
I will make them a shop.
We could probably just make our own shirt, Emily. If they're defunct, how mad at us can they actually
are
get?
Is Dicker trademarked? Can we spell it with an extra R? Because it's K-E-R-R.
I mean, it's K-E-R-R anyways.
I know. Oh my fucking God. This is the best thing in the world. DickerLadies.com. Yes.
Emily is so drunk.
I'm so happy.
It's not that funny.
It is hilarious. Kelly, here's
Emily,
the thing.
One of the main pants in the United States is Dickies.
I know, and that's also fucking hilarious. But they're not called Dickies Ladies.
I don't get it, but whatever. We're just going to continue. Anyways, Alice's team played against them in one of the first European international. Emily is getting hung up on the weirdest things.
Tell me more about how she hid the penis in the dude's bag, in the dude's school bag.
That was a different woman.
Do you remember?
Yeah, I do. And it wasn't in his bag. It was in the pocket of his lab coat.
Oh, that's right. Tell me more about how she put the severed penis in his pocket. Go on.
From after she established that Fremont, she would, in her free time, write for magazines and promote women's football in articles. So eventually in August of 1922, the Women's World Games happened, the Jeux Olympiques Féminines, or the first Women's Olympics. As Alice liked to say, Alice liked to proclaim that this was the first Women's Olympics. We'll get to it, but that made the Olympic Committee very unhappy.
As it should, because they're assholes.
But
fuck
basically,
you, Pierre.
It took place in Pershing Stadium in Paris, France, and featured five teams representing the United States, Great Britain, Switzerland, Czechoslovakia, and France. 11 athletic events were conducted, and there was about 20,000 people, which is still pretty impressive for, the first event.
Yeah.
And it was a one-day event that saw 18 athletes break several world records. So here's my favorite part. Alice chose this venue, particularly Paris, because that was the home city of Pierre Coubertin.
Yes!
Who was, that was the hemorrhoid. And one of the most vocal opponents to women's. So yeah, basically she was like, can we do it here, please? Because fuck him.
If we could do the pole vault in front of his house, that would be great.
And what's interesting is in the intervening 4 years between 1922 and when the next Olympics was supposed to women's Olympics was supposed to take place, Pierre was replaced with Henri de Bellet-Latour as head of the IOC, and originally they were going to hold it in his hometown in Belgium, but Belgium withdrew from the competition, so they couldn't.
Oh my God.
But I was like, Alice, you're fantastic.
I love that the Women's Olympics was just choosing the city it was held
based
in.
Based on who we're going to piss off the most.
Yeah, okay. Who are we really going to rub their nose in this? Yeah. Pierre is gone. This new guy's in. Let's fuck his shit up.
Right. So, infuriated by the use of the term Olympic Games, the International Olympic Committee convinced Alice and the FIFSFI to change the name of their event. In exchange, the Olympics would add 10 more women's events to the 1928 Olympics. So they're like, hey, we'll add a few more sports.
They kind of forced their hand where it's like, hey, if you don't want us to be calling this the Olympics.
Right,
let us into the actual Olympics, you pricks.
Right. So as such, when the next Women's Olympics was held, it was held in Sweden in 1926, and it was called the Women's World Games instead of the Olympics. This time, 10 teams took part in this edition of the Games, and the Olympics eventually integrated five women's track and field events along with five other events into the 1928 Olympics. However, Alice was like, that's not enough. Men are allowed to compete in 22 different events, and you're letting us compete in 22 track and field events. And you gave women five.
Yeah.
So she was like, I'm not okay with that. In fact, so even though Alice was French, the 1928 Olympics were actually boycotted by the women's British Olympic team as well, for the same reason of like, you're not being fair to what you're allowing women to compete in. So we're also not going to be in it. Whether that was, I don't think that was directly influenced by Alice, but it was for the same reasons. So two further World Games would be held in Prague and then in London in 1930 and 1934, respectively. And after the 1934 Games, Alice would issue an ultimatum to the IOC. Basically, she was like, okay, guys, like, this has gone on long enough, basically. Fully integrate the 1936 Olympics. You know, men and women can compete in equal sports, whatever, or cede all of women's participation to FIFSVI. Basically, it's like, let us join wholeheartedly,
yeah,
or let us do our own thing.
It's all or nothing.
Exactly. So this led the IAAF, again, remember, they're the track and field people, to come in and basically be like, okay, like, let's mediate. Because a lot of what you're asking for kind of fell within their range. So they acted as mediators between FIFSVI and the Olympic Committee. And eventually FIFSVI would cede control of women's athletics to the IAAF, not to the Olympic Committee. But that's because IAAF was like, okay, we'll expand the program and we'll recognize all of the world records that have been set during these women's world games.
Wow. Okay. That's really cool though.
Yeah. Because they weren't really, weren't like part of like the, or like official records. Like, yeah. So the fact that they were like, okay, we'll come back and we'll recognize all these records that you guys set.
And why I think it's interesting when you said they broke world records, maybe this was an incorrect assumption, but I assumed it was period, you know, not just for women,
no,
but
it was period.
World
yeah.
records. Yeah. Yeah. So it's like the fact that they are accepting the fact that women have blown men's records out of the right. water like that is a huge step.
Yeah. So it eventually agreed to expand to an expanded 9-event program at the Olympics. And like I said, to recognize the record athletes had established in the Women's World Games. It also turned the scheduled 1938 Women's World Games into the European Athletics Championships. So after like this agreement was reached, Alice spoke to an interviewer from Women's Magazine called The Independent Woman. In her statement, she advocated for women's suffrage in France, and she believed women's suffrage would lead to greater support for women's sports. She said, quote, women's sports of all kinds are handicapped in my country by the lack of playing space. As we have no vote, we cannot make our needs publicly felt or bring pressure to bear in the right quarters. I always tell my girls that the vote is one of the things they will have to work for if France is to keep its place with the other nations in the realm of feminine sport. Although FIFSVI had staged an event with an increasing number of participants and expanded its membership from the initial 5 nations to 30 by the time that the agreement was reached, it never met again after that decision about the 1936 Olympics, and Alice kind of fell out of the public eye when it came to women's sports, and there's really not much known about her after those years.
It kind of sounds like she did what she wanted to do, though.
I mean, she tried. Because under successive IOC presidents, the proportion of women competitors at the Olympics never rose above 15% until the 1970s.
Well, goddamn it!
Yeah. So Alice lived a quiet life. Like I said, she would pass away in Paris on May 19th, 1957, at the age of 73. She would live to see women be able to vote in France. But if her goal was to see a fully equal slate at the Olympics, we still haven't seen that.
Yeah.
According to Top End Sports, only 44% of the medals awarded at Rio, so that was 2 Olympics ago, 4 Olympics, I don't know, whenever Rio was, but it was only 44% of the event came from women's events, and 3 of those came from the same event.
Like gymnastics or something.
The women's 800.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, it's still not equal.
Yeah. No. Well, and the thing is though, we haven't made it, and maybe even in our lifetimes, we probably won't in a lot of areas. But that doesn't mean her work didn't have an impact.
Oh, no, not at all.
And I'm not saying you're saying that. I'm just, in general, you know, she didn't get to see what she ultimately was going for, but she helped us get there. That's pretty awesome.
So, legacy. The efforts of Alice and the Fifthsy, though opposed at literally almost every single thing they tried to do, greatly accelerated the development of serious international sports competitions for women. The woman that was the treasurer for Fifthsy when it like disbanded, Germaine Gagneau-Bisson, indicated in a letter that she wrote her belief about the contributions of this movement. She said, "The initiative taken by Madame Milliat and the subsequent success of Fifthsy served to sensitize the athletic milieu, which did not want to hear about women." Basically, it's like we're at least getting the word out there that women can play sports.
Yes.
Had it not been for Alice and Fifthsy, the entrance to women in Olympic participation, particularly in track and field, probably would have taken significantly longer.
Mm-hmm.
Because like she was pushing them at every turn she could. The foundation, Alice Millet, was established in 2016 and promotes women's sports in France and the rest of Europe. There are several gymnasiums named after Alice in France. And on March 8th, 2021, a statue of Alice was unveiled at the French Olympic Committee's headquarters in Paris in recognition of her efforts towards women's sports. I do not like it.
Oh, no.
In the Times later that month, Elgin Alderman wrote that the 1921 Women's World Games was a seismic moment for progress in women's sports at the Olympics and that no one had contributed more than Alice in enabling the development. And that is very true. Alice opened the public eyes to what women could do and really just pushed the Olympic Committee and other federations to recognize them. And she was like, if you're not going to do it, let us do it ourselves.
Mm-hmm. No. And exactly. It's like, hey, if you're not going to let us join, then you cannot
right.
hinder us from doing our own thing.
Exactly. She was very much like, she was just like, you know, if you don't want to let us join, whatever, but we're going to do our own thing then. And yeah, like stop getting in our way, basically.
Yeah. Where it's like, you can't deny our participation, then be mad when we create our own community.
Right.
Like, what the fuck? No, we don't want you to get together, period, with us or each other.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, seriously, that's how messed up it is. Well, I know that Dory is loudly not appreciating your story.
I don't know if the listeners are going to be able to hear that or not.
It's really loud. Dory, okay, so first of all,
Dory is just out.
Dory looks unalived right now.
Yeah, she
laid out on the floor. But we know she is alive because she is
very loudly.
She's snoring like a frat boy after a bender. It's a lot.
It's fantastic.
It's going to be really interesting to see if I can hear this when I edit, because it can't come out. I don't see any way I can get it out because it's while we're talking.
I know, but you might be able to like, because I know there's buttons in DaVinci to like mitigate background noise, so that might work.
Well, I do that, but it's
so hopefully I don't know, like, because I couldn't hear it until we stopped talking.
Oh, I could hear it the entire time.
Oh, I couldn't, so maybe it'll be fine.
It's fine.
It'll be fine.
Everything's fine. You know what?
Dory
is a strong, independent woman, and she's entitled to her snoozles. But no, seriously, that was an awesome story about Alice. Thank you so much for sharing. I think our uteruses that have failed to fall out of our bodies from excessive bicycling. I can't say that word today. Bicycling.
Cycling.
Bicycling. Bicycling.
Just say cycling.
Cycling.
So much easier.
Say
cycling.
Cycling. Shit. Cycling.
Are you okay?
No, I'm not. This German wine is not fucking around. I love it so much, Kelly. Should we go to Germany
you
right
have
now?
A problem.
Should we go to Germany
right
now? I
do not have
now?
The money to go to Germany right now.
Okay, what about like tomorrow?
No.
Wait, I've got shit going on tomorrow. What about like next week?
Maybe next week.
Okay. All right, well, our uteruses are glowing because I am also covering a woman of the sport ball.
A woman of the, okay.
A woman of the sport ball. She's also a little bit of a hometown hero for us, which it's funny because
I mean, technically neither of us, this is our hometown.
You know what, Kelly? That kind of negativity, don't fucking need it right now. Don't need it right now.
Just tell your story. Who are you whining about?
Today I'm whining about hometown hero, Tony fucking Stone. Also known as the best baseball player you've never fucking heard of. What?
Okay. All right. I was like, I do not know who this woman is.
Exactly. You never heard of her. And that is our whole jam. So, little background. After the American Civil War, during Reconstruction, baseball started booming in popularity among Black veterans in the East and Mid-Atlantic states. City teams such as the Albany Bachelors, Jamaican Motors Club, and Philadelphia Excelsiors, and Chicago Uniques.
Oh.
I put in a bunch of baseball team names in this because they're all
fantastic.
Fucking amazing. The Chicago Uniques. I want that jacket with my Dickers Ladies shirt. Like, I need this anyway. So all of these teams began forming and playing against each other. And by the end of the 1860s, Philadelphia had established itself as the center of Black baseball.
Ooh.
While the horrors of segregation and racism were prevalent, baseball surged in popularity among Black Americans, with some players crossing the quote-unquote color line and entering professional leagues in the 1870s. Seven professional Black baseball leagues formed, which were collectively referred to as Negro League Baseball. I will be using that word in reference to the titles. Yes. I looked at a bunch of historical websites where the teams of this time are collectively known as like the Negro Baseball League, that kind of thing. So
that's what we have.
Just disclaimer, that's why I'm referring to it that way. Even the website about this whole period in baseball and Black baseball.
Okay.
Is called that. So,
I trust you.
By the 1920s, there was even a colored World Series. Again, their words, not mine. Jackie Robinson had gotten his start in the Negro Leagues, playing for the Kansas City Monarchs before breaking the major league color line and signing with the Brooklyn Dodgers in 1947. Jackie Robinson, ever heard of him?
Yes.
Just maybe a vague recollection?
Yeah, somewhere in there.
He did a thing with the sports balls.
Exactly.
So the Negro Leagues would continue until the 1960s as more and more players crossed and dismantled the color line and integration was prioritized. While 99.97% of players in the Negro Leagues were men, there were three women known to play professionally. And today, we're going to cover one of them.
Yay.
And I believe she was the first one of the three. So, Tony Stone was born Marcenia Lyle Stone on July 17th, 1921, in St. Paul, Minnesota. Don't you know? Hot dish Ludafisk Loons.
I mean, that's closer to my hometown than
Lutrans.
Lutrans. Oh my gosh.
Oh, let's get the gals together for some hot dish and a good old prayer circle.
What it? I don't think that's actually, like, at least not where I grew up.
It's 100% a thing.
No, it is a thing, but not where I grew up. Just very close to St. Paul.
Hometown
that's
heroes.
I said, this is closer to my hometown than yours.
Yes. I claim
what
everyone
did you
in Minnesota,
say
though.
Her first name was?
So she's known as Toni Stone, but she was born Marcenia.
I like that name.
Isn't it pretty? No, it's a very nice name. She did change it, and that was like her choice and her identity, and I very much support that. Marcenia is a lovely name, though.
I didn't realize like she actually changed it. I thought Tony was like a nickname.
No, we'll get to it. So, yes, my lovelies, we have a Minnesota maven on our hands. So yes. Get ready for some accents and some Ludafisk jokes. Lots of flannel. Everyone's wearing flannel.
I'll be back when
Kelly's
everyone's done.
Like, I fucking hate this. I covered a woman from France because I want to get as far away from Minnesota as humanly possible.
Not even that. It's just like, you're almost making fun of my state.
Is also my state. I have dual citizenship in both Minnesota and Illinois. Oh, by the way, speaking of you covering a French story, I was very proud of you and very impressed with how you did not shy away from the French.
I was just like, I'm just going to go for
it. You nailed it. And I'm so proud of you.
Thank you.
So Tony's father, Boykin Stone, was a graduate of Tuskegee University and a veteran of World War One. Uh-huh. Her mother, Willa Stone, again, Willa.
Love that's a nice name too. Yeah.
That's a name. Worked as a hairdresser, and the two would have a boy and three girls, including Tony. When Tony was about 10 years old, the young family moved to the Rondo neighborhood of St. Paul, Minnesota, where they opened Boykin's Barber and Beauty Shop. So that name, as someone who works in housing in Minnesota, put off alarm bells. So we're going to get into it. So if you're from Minnesota, you may have heard of the Rondo neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Have you heard of it, Kelly? Okay. Well, now our listeners are going to know. A historically Black neighborhood, Rondo was a cultural center for the Black community in the Twin Cities. However, likely because it was a predominantly Black neighborhood, the center was demolished between 1956 and 1968 to make way for Interstate 94. The argument at the time was that the land was cheaper, but it was artificially cheaper because of redlining and racist housing practices and racism. So this not only split the community in half by an impassable highway, but it also displaced over 650 families, destroyed businesses, community centers, and more. Since the 2000s, community leaders and activists have been working to address the harm done to Black citizens, rebuild the community, and reconnect the community by building a land bridge across the interstate. Hmm. And if you want to learn more about that and support these efforts, you can go to reconnectrondo.com. Also, there is something there was something that I learned in like a housing thing. There is a new down payment assistance fund and program available to people who were affected by the interstate building or whose ancestors, like grandparents, great grandparents, were affected by it. If they lost their homes or their businesses, they can get down payment assistance to buy a home. And if they want to buy a home in the Rondo neighborhood, because it is still there despite the interstate running right through it, they can get even more down payment assistance to buy a home. And there, we already have like,
That's so cool though.
Well, in Minnesota, I think is like one of the, it's like the second or third worst state for the racial homeownership gap. And like, we like to think in Minnesota, we're pretty together. We're super fucking not. So this is another way to not only repair the harm done, not repair, but try and address the harm, address the harm done, but also promote that generational wealth building amongst, you know, Black families that has historically been denied because racism. Anyway,
yay, boo.
It was, but I thought that was so, I'm like, oh my God, I know about this. This is so cool. I finally get to talk about it. So, but before the I-94 construction, the Stones were busy building their family and their business. Tony enjoyed playing baseball with neighborhood boys, earning her the super creative nickname, Tomboy. Raise your hand if you're a recovering tomboy. Tony wore trousers instead of skirts and participated in a variety of sports, including swimming, track, basketball, and football.
Oh.
According to Kelly, only some of those are considered athletics.
Not according to me, according to my story.
I thought that was so funny. So she was also a good student, an avid reader, and socially conscious, keeping up with the Chicago Defender, which was a Black newspaper.
I think we've talked about it before.
I know we've mentioned it.
I was like,
it.
I would be very surprised if we haven't.
We have mentioned it. So this is the 1930s. So Tony's interest in traditionally boyish activities were cause for concern for her mother, who tried to steer her in a different direction. Her mother bought her a pair of figure skates and encouraged her to channel her athleticism in a more ladylike, into a more ladylike activity. Tony is one of those athletes where she's just good at everything. Mm-hmm. She can fucking do whatever she wants. So Tony actually had a knack for figure skating and performed well in a citywide competition.
Yeah.
And this is in St. Paul, Minnesota, where we are like the capital of ice sports. But it wasn't just, but it just like wasn't her jam. She's like, yeah, I'm good at this, but I don't care for it.
Yeah.
She missed baseball. And when it was suggested that she try softball, she said it wasn't fast enough.
Oh.
She has a need for speed.
I mean, there's fast pitch softball, which they can pitch as fast as the men.
Though Toni excelled at sports in general, her heart was in baseball, and she would skip school to go play. Like, she's a really good student. She's a very smart girl, but she loves baseball. Like, she's so dedicated to it from such an early age.
Yeah.
So not sure what to do with their tomboy daughter, Toni's Catholic parents consulted with a priest.
Sounds about right.
Yep. 100%. But here's the twist. Instead of encouraging prayer or forcing Toni to wear feminine clothes, the priest took notice that she wasn't pitching cookies and suggested she try out for the Claver Catholic Church Boys baseball team.
I like this preacher.
Yeah, here's the thing. When it comes, I love it because this is such a guy thing. It's like, okay, encourage a girl to be a girl or help my sports team.
Right.
It's like, it's so hard. And it's like, sports come first. Helping my little boys, my little Catholic League boys team succeed is more important than this girl wearing a skirt and not playing baseball.
That's funny.
So this was part of like the Catholic Little League, basically, mm-hmm. which I'm like, oh my God, Catholic Little League. Can you fucking, here's the thing. I did sports in Catholic schools. So like, I get it, but also it's hilarious. So because it was a church activity, Toni's parents agreed to let her play. But the Claver Catholic Church Boys baseball coach had no interest in Toni or teaching her. So Toni taught herself because Toni was going to wait for no man to come and rescue her. Mm. She read rule books, joined the girls' softball team to practice, and watched the baseball school that was run by Gabby Street, the manager of the St. Paul Saints. Gabby Street recalled, quote, I love this. I just couldn't get rid of her until I gave her a chance. Every time I chased her away, she would go around the corner and come back to plague me again. Ladies.
That's fantastic.
Weaponize the obnoxious to your benefit. By age 16, Toni was playing with the Twin City Colored Giants in weekend exhibition games, earning a whopping $2 to $3 per game. In 1943, Toni took a big swing. She dropped out of school and moved to the Fillmore District in San Francisco, where her sister lived, to make a go of playing baseball professionally.
Wow.
And again, she's a really good student. She's
big move, though.
Really intelligent. She's really talented. But this is all she wants to do, and she's going to fucking make it happen. There is no, like, plan B for her. So with this new move came a rebrand. Marcinia Lyle Stone took the name Toni Stone as she felt it suited her better and like her baseball aspirations, I love that for her. So Toni supported herself by working odd jobs, including at Jack's Tavern, which was the first Black-owned nightclub in the Fillmore District. Go them. There she met Captain Aurelius Piscina Alberga. That's the only time I say his name, but what a name it was. So he was a World War I veteran and California native. The two would marry in 1950, but this didn't change Toni's dreams at all.
How much older was he than her?
It didn't say.
Okay.
He was older.
Yep. I was like just doing the timeline in my head. I'm like,
Yeah, so he's a World War I vet. We can like him though.
Okay. He's a good guy.
So Captain Aurelius would continue living in the San Francisco Bay Area while Toni traveled around the country pursuing her baseball dreams. Aww. The couple would stay married until the 1980s when Captain Aurelius died at 103 years old.
Holy shit.
I know. That dude lived through so many fucking wars. He's a World War I vet, the OG.
Yeah.
Great War. And he saw so much shit before he died in the 80s.
Wow.
Oh my God. But yeah, so like that's all we really hear about him. But he definitely was like,
I mean, he clearly supported her. Toni, so like, that's all that matters.
You go.
Yeah.
Fucking get it. So Jack's Tavern didn't just introduce Toni to her husband, but also to owner Alroyd Al Love, who connected her with the local American Legion baseball team, part of a national network of amateur baseball teams for teens.
Was she a teenager during this time?
We're going to get to it. Your questions shall be answered in the form of a no. So okay. Tony had played unofficially with the American Legion team in Minnesota, but by now at age 27, she had aged out of the league. Never being one to not do the goddamn thing, Tony lied about her age, saying she was 17. She shaved 10 years off of her age and everyone believed her.
She's also like married and everyone was still yeah, this is fine.
Well, first of all, 17 year olds being married was like, yeah, still. That's peak age. But I'm like, if I could shave 10 years off my age right now, like if I could and someone would believe me, how like, oh my God, I'd feel so young and youthful and like, I think, remember when we covered like women dressing up as men in the American Civil War, mm-hmm. and it was like men didn't know what women actually looked like if they weren't in a bunch of corsets and yep. skirts. I feel like this is a little bit of that, where yep. they're like, I can't tell how old a woman is. So she played with the San Francisco team from 1943 to 1945. Then in 1949, Tony became acquainted with the San Francisco Sea Lions.
Ooh.
The Sea Lions were one of the teams making up the West Coast Negro Baseball Association. So during World War II, black communities had grown along the West Coast, meeting the high demand for workers at military institutions and shipyards. The West Coast Negro League, started by Abe Saperstein and Jesse Owens, yes, that four-time Olympic gold medal winner Jesse Owens,
damn,
to provide black players on the West Coast with a platform.
Yeah.
You know, because baseball amongst the black community was already proliferating and becoming very popular, and now we have this big move and this congregation of black communities along the West Coast, and it's so naturally they're going to have their own baseball league. However, the league only lasted 3 months.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Leaving owners Hal King and Harold Morris at a loss. So they were the owners of the San Francisco Sea Lions, and they were like, well, shit. That was 3 months wasted. They did decide to continue the team independently and traveled around playing exhibition games. This was called barnstorming?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. So, but without league support, they were languishing. Tony approached the owners with a proposition. Put her on the team. Not only could she play baseball, but she argued that having a woman play in would draw crowds. And it fucking worked.
Oh, yeah.
She joined the Sea Lions. At her first time at bat, she batted in 2 runs, which means more to baseball folks than it does to me. But it's a good thing.
I know what it means.
It's a good thing. However, traveling around the country to play in exhibition games was difficult. And Tony decided to leave the team when she found out that she was getting paid less than the men. So, like, this was already a really difficult thing on her. And then she found out she wasn't even getting paid her worth. And she's like, fuck y'all.
Which, good for her. Like, see, the fact hard. That she actually, like, yeah, left instead of being like, well, this is what I want to do.
I think either choice to, like, stay on to do what you're trying to do, you know, even facing the negative circumstances, or being like, I'm not putting up with this.
Fuck
like,
y'all.
Neither is the wrong choice. It depends on what the right choice is for her, and she definitely made the right choice for her, and I'm very proud of her for that.
Yeah, no, I just think, like, yeah, it's so brave.
It is. No, it really is. So Tony left the Sea Lions for the New Orleans Creoles, whom she played with from 1949 to 1952. And then in 1953, Sid Pollock, a white sports executive active in the Negro League and owner of the Indianapolis Clowns, approached Tony trying to get her to sign on to the team. Seriously, some of these names are just fucking insane.
It's like the Clowns. Yeah. Okay.
It kind of make, at first I was like, that's really offensive. It kind of makes sense though. And I'll get into it a little bit. So this wasn't the first time that Sid had tried to hire Tony, as he had been trying to sign her since like 1950. So it's like 3 years. He's like, hey, let's make this happen. So Tony finally agreed and signed on for the 1953 season to play second base, taking over for Hank Aaron. Ever heard of him?
Like the Hank Aaron?
The Hank Aaron. And yeah. not the crappy one from Futurama, like the OG Hank Aaron. So he had actually left to join the Milwaukee Braves, which became the Atlanta Braves. No one cares. It's fine. But he left the team and she came in to replace him.
That's insane.
Which is, holy shit.
Yeah.
So while the press widely reported that Tony signed on for $12,000 for the 1953 season, this was likely just a publicity stunt rather than a real figure. It was probably more like $200-$400. Like, it was really just like, because they were like, oh my God, that's even more than these other like big name male players. Holy right, shit. Exactly. It's like, it wasn't. That's not what she actually got paid. It was lies. So the Indianapolis Clowns were kind of like the Harlem Globetrotters of baseball. So they performed both trick style entertainment games and serious baseball. So that's why I'm like, okay, the Clowns kind of make a little bit more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause at first I was like, ooh, that's in poor taste. I know this is in the 1950s, but what the fuck? So adding Tony to the team was the perfect fit because she attracted crowds as a novelty as a woman playing baseball, let alone a woman playing with men, but she could also actually play. So she fit both of those.
Yeah.
Those like brands. I don't know what Navi is doing under my feet, but she's into it. She's talking baseball. So Tony became the star of the team with attendance soaring for her being featured heavily on promotional materials. During the 1953 season, Tony played in 50 games, batting a .243, which means something to baseball folks.
Like, I like baseball, but I still couldn't tell you how good that is.
Oh, abso-fucking-lutely not. There are people who go to games with, like, their binders and stuff. I get one of those giant Trulies. I go to Target Field, giant Truly, and I just hang out. And that's one of the reasons I like baseball, because I can actually tell what's going on. But if you tell me to get into the numbers of it,
you're like, it's too much.
I was an English major for a reason. I hate math. So despite Tony's success, she was not welcomed into the Negro Leagues. Sexism was rampant, and Clown's manager, Bunny Downs, told her that, quote, this is like the most classic sexism quote.
No, I don't know if I want to hear it.
She'd better stick to knitting and home cooking. Oh, God. It's like an iota away.
So
I
was like, go home and have a baby.
It's an iota away from go in the kitchen and make me a sandwich, dame. So Tony's teammates shunned and harassed her. Players on the other teams would try and nail her with the ball and worked really, like, they targeted her. Yeah. They're like, we got to get this bitch out of here. She wasn't allowed to use the locker rooms to change and was lucky if she even got to use the umpire's locker room. To up the sex appeal of having a woman playing baseball, Tony was told to wear a skirt, but she fucking refused.
Yeah.
So she didn't do it.
Fuck that shit.
She's like, nope, we're not doing that. Tony took pride in how the men were out to get her. She would show off a scar on her wrist that she'd received from being spiked by a runner trying to take her out while getting to second base.
Whoa.
So basically, the runner's trying to slide into second.
And they just like hit her. And
he's trying to like take her out with his cleats, and she tags him and gets like cut on the wrist with his cleats. And as she recalled, he was out. And she would like, she'd be like, hey, I got this bitch out.
This guy was trying to be an asshole to me and I fucked him up.
It's like when I was in second grade, I was playing freeze tag and I like leaped to tag this kid and I landed on my face and slid across the asphalt. My face from like the top of my forehead to the bottom of my chin was scraped to shit and I chipped a tooth. But you know what I did? Fucking tagged that mofo. That second grader ate my dust. And maybe my blood. There was a lot of it. It's fine. I recovered. So, even though she took a lot of pride in like how the guys were out to get her, it doesn't mean it was always easy. She would also describe sitting on the bench, surrounded by men who fucking hated her, saying, quote, it was hell. So it's like, she's really trying to make the best of it and like let it kind of fuel her competitive spirit. But there's no way to ignore the way that everyone's treating her like shit. There's no way to not let that get to you. There's not enough positive thinking in the world that's going to make that okay.
Right.
Now, thanks to a league of their own, we all know about the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League, which was active from 1943 to 1954. So why didn't Tony try and play with them?
Because it was all white women, wasn't it?
Ding, 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 ding. Racism. Racism is the secret word of the day. Racism and sexism. Yay. Kind of the secret words of every episode.
Right.
So the All-American Girls League was segregated. It was like an unofficial policy, but I'm like, if you never broke it, then it was an official. Like, I don't care if you didn't write it down. It was an official policy. Yep. Don't fuck you. Don't try to make it sound less bad. It was a segregated league, so even if Tony wanted to play with the Springfield Sallies, the Muskegon Belles, the Chicago Colleens, the Rockford Peaches, or the Minneapolis Millerettes.
I forgot, like, how feminine the names of those teams were.
There were a lot of Belles and a lot of ladies, but I named the ones, like, that I thought were funny, or like I've been to those cities, because Minneapolis was the mill city. We were the mill capital of the world. I got to tour the Mill City Museum for my birthday, and it was amazing. That place exploded like 3 times. It was great. Yeah. So even if she wanted to join any of these teams, she couldn't because it was an all-white league. Tony's contract with the Clowns was sold to the Kansas City Monarchs, which was Jesse Owens' former team. Jackie Robinson, sorry. Jackie Robinson's former team for the 1954 season. And while things had been rough with the Clowns, the Kansas City Monarchs were arguably worse.
Oh, no.
She spent much of the season on the bench, again, sitting among men who
didn't want her there.
Fucking hated her. And, like, it wasn't even like they just ignored her. They loathed her presence. She would retire the following season due to lack of playing time. She's like, I'm not even getting to play. I'm literally spending all my time sitting here with everyone hating me. I'm not even getting to play. So she would retire and move back to California where she worked as a nurse. And she would nurse her husband. You know, like, I don't know what his situation was, but he had poor health.
Yeah, he was ill. He was old.
Yeah. Oh my God. I didn't write down when she died.
Hold on. To the Google.
To the Google.
Zanana. I have acquired a baby pug.
Fucking hate Bing.
Why don't you use Google?
Well, it's the default on this Microsoft Edge thing, and I don't use my laptop for anything anymore, so. Tony Stone would die on November 2nd, 1996, of heart failure at a nursing home in Alameda, California, at 75 years old. So she lived a good life. Even though she was caring for her sick husband, he still lived to be 103 for some reason. So I don't know. I have questions.
Yeah.
None of them are relevant to the story. I just personally am very nosy. Legacy. So Tony was included in 2 exhibits in the Baseball Hall of Fame in the 1990s, one profiling women in baseball and the other profiling the Negro League. I tried to see if she had been inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. I couldn't find anything saying she was, which I'm like, come on. Come
right?
on. Like, she was the first. On. She was the first woman to play in Major League Baseball. She was the first Black woman to play in Major League Baseball. Come on.
Get your heads out of your asses.
Let's do this. Let's make it happen. She was inducted into the Women's Sports Hall of Fame, though, and the International Women's Sports Hall of Fame. So that's good. St. Paul, Minnesota, her hometown, has declared March 6th Tony Stone Day and has a field named after her at Denning Baseball Complex. I don't know where that is.
Nope, that's what I was about to say.
I played softball. I didn't even play softball. I played fucking T-ball. When I was a little tot. That is as far as my bat hitting ball career went. Tony was the subject of the February 9th, 2022 Google Doodle, ooh, which shows her like she's in her clown's uniform and like up, she catches the ball and like throws it to first so that nice. The first baseman could get someone out. It's awesome. On June 19th, now this is my favorite. This was the leg. There's a lot of stuff that she's been mentioned in songs, plays, literature. Yeah. There's an autobiography. All this, not autobiography, biography, excuse me. There's a bunch of really good stuff, but this was the thing that really stuck out to me. So on June 19th, 2021, as part of their Juneteenth celebration, the San Francisco Giants wore replica uniforms of the San Francisco Sea Lions while they were playing against the Phillies to commemorate the 75th anniversary of the team. Because, like, they actually, like, they were not paying Tony what she was worth. Aww. They also did not last. Like, the same year she left, they stopped being a team, but they were still a significant part of Black baseball and like deserve to be honored. Sexism intersects with that though, and that's just something we have to understand. So this commemorated the 75th anniversary of the team. Tony Stone's family was in attendance and they were presented with a jersey to honor Tony's legacy. And I'm not crying. You're crying. Like, I think that's so beautiful that not only are they recognizing this arguably pretty short-lived team for its significance in Black history, in baseball history, in their community, but also Tony herself. According to, and this is how I want to end this because I couldn't find a lot of quotes from Tony. According to the Negro League Baseball Players Association, Tony Stone is, quote, one of the best players you have never heard of. And that is the story of Tony Stone, the first woman to play in Major League Baseball.
I love that.
Yeah. The consummate tomboy.
The consummate tomboy.
Yeah. No, I thought that was so interesting because I saw a Facebook post about a Black women's baseball team called the Owl something. I couldn't find a lot of information on them, unfortunately, to like constitute for a whole segment of the episode, but that kind of took me down the rabbit hole and I found Tony. I started reading about her. I was like, oh my God, she's from Minnesota. Oh my gosh, she lived in the Rondo neighborhood. Oh my God. Like I need to talk about her. This is amazing. Like this is all green flags. So, and I love that we both covered sports babes. Sports ball babes.
Sports ball.
Look at us talking sports ball. Tony and Nell was talking sports ball. That Pierre was an Anna talking sports ball.
I like that.
Kelly, what are you thankful for?
What am I thankful for? That I don't have someone named Pierre in my life that's an asshole.
Now, if he wasn't an asshole, a Pierre would be welcome. But yeah just.
But Pierre was an asshole. Well, one Pierre was an asshole.
Yes. There are two kinds of Pierres.
The other one was kind of just like there. It didn't sound like it was necessarily negative or positive.
I mean, it sounded like he was at least trying to be an ally.
Yeah.
Which I'll take it. But yeah, no, I am also very happy with my lack of shitty Pierres. It's a good feeling.
It is. It's like,
I got 99 problems, but a shitty Pierre ain't one.
But Pierre ain't one.
But Pierre ain't one.
Oh, what am I thankful for? I'm like, what has gone on lately?
There's just so much to be thankful for that's overwhelming to the point where Kelly's head might explode.
It's more like I feel like I'm thankful for the same things every time.
That's okay, though, because it's kind of nice to know that you have things that are consistently good in your life versus like, well, one little thing happened to me this week and that is the only thing I have to be thankful for because my life is not going in a good direction.
Yeah. My brain is still like,
Would you like me to go?
Sure.
I actually have one.
Go for it.
So my fella's brother, sister-in-law, and little nephew, Lolo, they moved from Chicago to the cities. And I'm thankful for that. But what I'm mostly thankful for is that we got to see them. And Lolo, who has not liked me the past several times he's seen me. So like when he was little, you know, he's a baby, doesn't know what's going on, where he's like, as long as you're holding him and feeding him, he's like fine, your best friend. But once he started getting old enough to be like, bitch, I don't know you. He was like, bitch, I don't fucking know you. And was like not having it with me. And it broke my fucking heart. Like I'm good with kids. It's like my one thing. I'm good with kids and I'm good at drinking German wine. I've got two things. So we got to see him and I decided to play it really cool where I was like kind of sitting behind the couch that he was on. I was kind of ignoring him. He gets close and he's like checking me out. And by the end of the visit, I was making him laugh and playing with him and we were best friends. And at one point I was playing peekaboo with him and the way he laughed, I actually grabbed my chest and was like, oh God, like
it was so cute.
It physically hurt. Like I felt like I got shot through the chest. It was amazing. And I'm like, I can't. He's so cute. Oh my fucking God. So we're best friends now. And
for now.
Well, we'll see. Yeah.
Toddlers change their mind very quickly.
100%.
When you see him again, there's still going to be that like, I don't know you.
Here's the thing. I'm still going to have to win him over, but I think if I just keep playing it cool.
Yeah.
Until he gets old enough where I can just buy his love, then we're going to be good. I'm taking that kid to the zoo, the children's museum. I'm taking that kid fucking everywhere.
Emily's like, I got this shit planned.
Oh my God. So many dinosaurs. We're going to look at dinosaurs at the science museum. He's going to touch the reptiles at the science museum. He's not going to cut in line because I ain't raising him that way.
Good.
Fuck those kids from the science.
I will never fucking be mad.
We were literally talking about this last weekend. We went to the Wine and Wolves benefit and we were talking and we were like, oh my God, I'm still not over that time. Those shitty kids cut in front of us in line at the science museum to touch the alligator and the snakes. And the mom looks at us and just shrugs like she has no control.
Right. It's like, they're your children, lady. Like, I'm like, come on,
bitch. I have nannied for 5 children at a time, multiple times. I was in charge of a class of 7. Okay? Don't tell me you don't have control. Now, if you want me to take control, I will do that. Right. Because fuck these kids. I'm so...
Yep. I just think it's funny because Kurt, your fella, just kind of like laughed at us. It's like, no, you don't understand.
And here's the thing, especially when you've worked with kids, seeing someone else so woefully inept at dealing with kids, who's not even trying. It's not even like... She was trying. She literally had given up. And I'm like, give me permission to step in here. Right. Please.
Exactly. It's like, I will discipline your children.
Because like, I will not parent someone else's kids. Yeah, I won't like step in and be the teacher or that kind of thing, like without permission, unless the kid's literally about to like run into a wall. Obviously. Like, you know. But if you give me permission, I will lay down the law. I will whip out my teacher voice. It's going to get scary up in here. Those kids are going to be basically in military school.
It's going to be great.
But with compassion.
Military school with compassion.
Oh, friends, this is not how we behave at the museum. We need to wait in line and take turns. And we need to listen to the grown-ups who are handling the animals so we can all be safe. And I wouldn't blink the whole time. I'd maintain like serious eye contact with each of them. That's all they needed. That's literally all they needed. And coming from a stranger like me, boom, done. Oh,
yeah. It would be done.
They would be terrified.
They'd be like, yes, lady.
Yes, ma'am. Remember the kids from our apartment building who used to throw trash?
No. I mean, yes, I do. And I'm still mad about that, too, because like there was one day they were like throwing like things small enough for my dogs to eat in the yard. Yeah. I was so mad. That's the one time I was actually confrontational, that we like went upstairs and knocked on the door and we're like,
oh, did you?
Yeah, I don't think anyone ever answered.
So I remember there was one time I was in the apartment alone. I think it was actually like on Mother's Day. So we lived in a ground level apartment. The apartment above us had a balcony and a bunch of kids would get together on the balcony and drop like toys and plastic and paper and garbage and orange peels and stuff. Cause like kids like to watch stuff fall. Right. I get that. But Kelly's pugs, that's where they hang out, and they would like find the stuff and chew on it and try to eat it. And we're like, oh my God,
you're gonna kill my dog.
That plastic ring is not edible. So I was at the apartment alone. I literally see trash raining from the sky. I step outside. I look up. All of the kids run away except for like 2 of them who are frozen in fear. Yep. And I just looked at them and I was like, are you throwing trash into the yard? And they just froze and they didn't say anything. I said, no, thank you. Those kids were fucking terrified of me. They saw me. They ran. That's hilarious. So nice. But, you know, like getting in trouble from a stranger is such an impactful thing.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't take a lot.
Well, especially since a lot of strangers won't say anything.
100%. But I'm like, I know I'm renting this apartment, but you're basically throwing trash in my yard and I do not appreciate it.
Right. Like, no, it's not okay.
Also, dogs. I don't want like, because here's the thing. If one of these dogs chokes and dies, you bet I'm leaving them on your doorstep. Just saying. Kelly, that was what was going to happen. I had a plan. There was going to be.
Where is my dog?
There was going to be a note. There was going to be some crying and some aggressive eye contact.
Okay.
Anyway, Kelly, what are you thankful for? That didn't happen.
Yeah. No, I'm thankful. I'm thankful for like the experience and you inviting me to go to the Wine and Wolves benefit and everything. Like, cause that was a lot of fun and pushing past my anxiety and actually going. And yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I appreciate the invite and I just appreciate the welcome from all the people that we went with and everything like that. So yeah.
Yeah, it was awesome. It benefited the Wildlife Science Center in the cities, which it was called like Wine for Wildlife, but we call it Wine and Wolves because they support wolves, and wolves are like all I really wolves care about. Best. Wolves are kind of the best. They're just big baby papa dogs. Yeah, there was a lot of wine. There was a lot of beer tasting. There was a silent auction.
There was no wolves.
There were no wolves.
But there were falcons.
And snakes.
And snakes.
Snakes. Little boop snakes. There was a little hog snake. It was super cute.
So cute.
Oh my God, his little face. Yeah, I got a little crazy. Kelly won a fuck ton of mead and we got wine.
I didn't win any mead. I won a gift certificate to a meadery.
You could spend it on like
a fuck ton of mead.
Well, or a toothpick's worth of that really bougie honey. Thank you. It was awesome. No, we supported charity. We supported wolves. No wolves. All wolves were benefited in the making of this episode.
There you go.
No wolves were harmed. In fact, they were all given little hats.
I would like to see these little hats.
I want to see wolves in little hats. Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Whining About Herstory. Like us on Facebook at Whining About Herstory, Instagram at WAAHPad.
Our website is whiningaboutherstory.com, where you can find a link to all of our websites, other websites, or social meds. Our sosh meads.
Our honey mead.
There you go.
Our honey meads.
a link to our Buy Me a Coffee, a link to our Patreon, where you can donate for as little as $1 to get some extra benefits, as well as some happy hours that are upcoming.
Extra bennies!
I forgot the rest of what I was going to say. Oh, and rate us 5 stars wherever you listen because it gives us warm, fuzzy feelings.
Yeah, and if you want to buy us and sponsor a bottle of wine, you do not have to go all the way to Germany, go into an Aldi, and bring back a bottle of wine all the way to Minnesota.
Regular Aldi's
fine. You can just go to regular Aldi. In fact, you can just donate $5 at buymeacoffee.com/WAHPad. And sponsor a bottle of wine for $5. You can make a recommendation, or we'll buy one based off your name, your country of origin, or something
else. We'll find something vaguely related to you.
Yeah, it's gonna get weird, okay? It's gonna get weird.
Yeah, we make no promises.
We make no promises.
Other than only, it will be vaguely related to
only
you.
Only threats.
Kind of, yeah.
Thank you so much for listening to another threatening episode of Whining About Herstory. I'm Emily.
I'm Kelly.
Have an empowered day, y'all. Bye. Go play some sports ball.